Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. If you haven't tuned in before, this is a podcast where we are running through all 178 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings about each and every one. Right now we're up to episode 21 of season 4. This one is called The Drumhead. It was directed by Jonathan Frakes, our own Commander Riker, written by Jerry Taylor, and it aired back on April 29th, 1991. When an explosion aboard the Enterprise leads to a high-level investigation headed by a renowned admiral, the Enterprise is torn apart by internal politics and a lot of McCarthyism. Tana, Clay, and Sean are here to talk about this one with me. It's The Drumhead, always considered to be a classic, I think. We'll see what we think about it right after this.
Your full name?
Jean-Luc Picard.
Rank and position?
Captain, Federation Starship Enterprise.
How long have you held this post?
Over 3 years, since Starlet 41124.
Very well. Admiral?
If you don't mind, there is something I would like to say.
If you have a statement, you'll have an opportunity to make it later.
I believe that Chapter 4, Article 12 of the Uniform Code of Justice grants me the right to make a statement before questioning begins.
Very well.
I'm deeply concerned about what is happening here. It began when we apprehended a spy, a man who admitted his guilt and who will answer for his crime. But the hunt didn't end there. Another man, Mr. Simon Tarsis, was brought to trial. And it was a trial, no matter what others choose to call it. A trial based on insinuation and innuendo. Nothing substantive offered against Mr. Tarsis, much less proven. Mr. Tarsis' grandfather is Romulan. And for that reason, his career now stands in ruins. Have we become so fearful? Have we become so cowardly that we must extinguish a man because he carries the blood of a current enemy?
So I think the continuity of TNG was put into its testing run or something in this episode. I think there must be more callbacks in The Drumhead than there are in any other episode of TNG to things that have previously happened.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. It surprised me that there were so many callbacks too. I was like, oh yeah, I forgot that happened.
It's a good use. It's a good use of, putting stuff to things that have happened that you don't necessarily need to know about if you're not a fan.
Right.
It's kind of like they looked in the fridge and had a bunch of different ingredients from other meals they made and decided to make one big, awesome meal with it.
Yeah.
called treason stir fry.
Treason stew.
Wow.
You put a pinch of suspicion in and you got a stew going.
You could say they were making a murderer.
Yeah. This episode actually reminded me a lot of Making a Murderer. This episode reminded me of Serial quite a bit.
Yeah.
I guess I'm just going to give a. I'm going to start it off by saying, this is like quintessential TNG, in the fact that the way everything pans out and the way they approach this story is so earnest in what goes on that it feels slightly dated, even though I think it's still an excellent episode. Do people want to chime in with like a general sense of this? We can start with you, Sean.
I looked at some of the reviews for this, and they were really across the board. Some loved it, some didn't. They all seem to agree that the idea is still valid, especially in a post 9/11 world.
Yep.
This episode still has a lot of validity even today.
Yeah.
Tana, what'd you think?
Yeah, that was my take too. I thought it was really relevant. I think it's a problematic episode for different reasons, but I think that at the heart, what it's about is kind of timeless in a sad and messed up way. So I was glad that they addressed it.
Clay?
I thought it was great. I think it's, you know, honestly, I can't remember all the other ones from this season, but I feel like this is my favorite one so far.
Yeah, I think this is the best episode of season four so far. Just to fill in what I meant before, TNG feels a little bit, I don't know if dated is the right word, but it feels like very 90s in the fact that it doesn't do Shades of Grey particularly. It's not interested in Shades of Grey. This and the episode that we're going to talk about that afterwards are of a mindset, and they go into it, and this one in particular, it takes the right path. Like, I can't disagree with what they say or what they come to a conclusion about, but it feels as though the side that I think is wrong is not given a particularly fair shake.
So you
end up just being like, well, yeah, I agree. Like, you shouldn't rush to judge people. You shouldn't rush to, you know, you shouldn't put through people through kangaroo courts. You shouldn't do all this stuff in the name of security. I think my main problem with the Drumhead is that Admiral Satie's side is never portrayed as being particularly valid in what they're doing.
Yeah, they don't really have any, you know, evidence or anything. It's just all going off of basically all going off of what the Betazoid said.
Well, what do you guys think about the fact? So the witness that changes everything, who says he's half, what does he say? He's half Vulcan, but he's really half Romulan.
Yep.
And he's exposed. This guy is like exposed in that lie. And I think that's the hinge pin, the point at which the whole episode shifts. And it goes from what is a really awesome Star Trek episode leading up. This woman ambassador comes on. Her and Picard have this head-to-head stuff. It's really cool stuff. And then this guy appears. He lies. He's lied about his heritage to get into Starfleet, or, you know, Romulans are evil, but Vulcans are okay. When that lie is exposed, everything that happens, I think, from that moment on is worthy of discussion, because I think it's really problematic on both sides. Did you guys notice that?
Well, intentionally problematic. I mean, I'd say it's intentionally problematic.
Why would you say that?
You wouldn't say that, or you're asking?
No. I'm wondering what your reasons are. I would absolutely agree with you.
Well, I think they're going for a completely, no one in the audience is going to miss what we're trying to say here.
Right.
And it's not particularly nuanced in that regard. I'll let someone else talk. So, Clay, were you going to say something?
I don't think I was.
Oh, I thought you were chiming in there in the back.
No, I think you're right. I think it is... it does kind of do what a lot of these episodes do, where this one and the next one are very close to the line of being a little too preachy.
Yep.
But that being said, I thought this one, I thought they were both pretty good. I thought this one was really interesting, and you know, they have 45 minutes to convince you that not only is this guy a suspect, but now Worf isn't entirely sure about who's to trust, to the point where they even are putting Captain Picard on trial. So I'll give him a little leeway, because they got to kind of steamroll some more nuanced stuff to get to that point.
What did you guys think of the fact that Picard? So on the one side of the argument, we have the accusers going after this guy that lied about who he is or what his biology is. And based on that, decides that he's a traitor, he's working with the Romulan Empire, he's, you know, and they go after, it starts a kangaroo court, right? It's a witch hunt. Picard's response to that is, I think, the other side of the pendulum and too far. You know, like, he invites this kid into his chambers and he's talking to him and he's taking him under his wing. And, you know, without... I mean, this kid could be somewhere in the middle, you know, like, yeah. Picard has decided he's innocent based on nothing, absolutely nothing.
Right. No, yeah, I definitely
nothing,
agree.
Nothing to stand on, yeah, which is...
Yeah, and so we have two sides that have no substance in either of their case. Like, neither side, pro or con, can defend, like, nobody has any evidence of anything, what? Until we get to the end where the woman's like, Picard, you're a traitor for this and this and this reason, which was really great, I thought. Well, but it just built there from nothing.
Well, here's my thing. Like, the Wounded was this season. And The Wounded spends 40 minutes trying to convince you that the Cardassians are innocent and this rogue captain has truly gone rogue. Mm-hmm. The last 5 minutes, it reverses it, and it shows that the rogue captain, who's going to be court-martialed, basically was correct in what he was suspicious of, that the Cardassians are, like, amassing a fleet along the border and things like that. And Picard turns around on the Cardassians, you know, and uses it as a, like, I'm going to do what I'm doing now to keep the peace. However, just be aware that we're going to be watching you. They don't do that in the Drumhead. They don't add any sort of nuance. It's totally different from Making a Murderer in that I don't think this episode believes for a second that any wrongdoing has been going on besides a Klingon.
Right.
And I think they could have nuanced that a little bit.
Right. Wasn't there evidence?
Go ahead, Sean.
Wasn't there the explosion that happened? Like, didn't they determine that that wasn't related to the terrorist?
It was
but
just
she
an
kept
accident.
Pushing
yeah.
it after that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So, like, the last, you know, 20 minutes of her argument were, we know she's wrong. We know she's just not, she's just being stubborn and she's out for some reason to, you know, represent her father's ideals or whatever. So you don't even give her a second thought as to whether she's right or wrong.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean the
whole argument scene at the end it plays like a courtroom scene, but actually what it's supposed to be is an interrogation scene.
Yes,
yeah. Because the whole point, you know, because when Picard comes in, the first thing he says is, "Why are there people here?" And she's like, "Oh, well, you know, it puts pressure on people." What did she say? Saboteurs don't like bright lights or some shit like that.
Yeah.
And so what that whole sequence is doing is, I guess when you look at it from the point of an interrogation versus an actual trial, they don't have any evidence. The whole point of it is to try and push as many buttons as possible to get someone to break.
This is, it's more like a grand jury, I think, is what I like. They're determining if there's a problem.
What's the thing called? You're guilty in the public eye. Like, there's a term for that. You've been found guilty in the public forum.
Court of public opinion.
Yeah, court of public opinion.
Court of public opinion. So I think she is creating a court of public opinion on this closed environment, which is the ship.
Yeah,
right. which she's using as a tactic, but she's not. Yeah. She's not. Well, I mean, maybe she is, but she's not taking into account how that's going to continue outside the proceedings.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she, for a grand jury, they really allow people just in the audience to sort of chime in whenever they want.
That's why I think it's more kangaroo court or like public opinion, right? Like, it's as if they sold seats to a show, you know?
Yeah. And I prefer the term kangaroo court to drumhead.
Yeah.
You know, Picard has to explain what a drumhead court is. I guess it's a real thing. I'd never heard of it.
Kangaroo Court doesn't have the same amount of gravitas for this episode.
He delivered those lines. This was a great Picard episode. Like, he is just he is Picard in this. And it was wonderful to watch because this felt like a great Star Trek episode. You know, like, I think that there are a couple of, from our vantage point now, there are no gray areas. You know, we're used to things not being presented to us in absolutes.
Yeah.
But this was a really great, I thought, Star Trek episode. You know, the characters, the trial, the different species. You know, she has a Beta Zed with her, which is, I don't know, have we seen many Beta Zeds besides Waxana and half Beta Zed Troy?
Every
Tam Elbrun.
Every episode Troy is in, there's another Beta Zoid.
Really?
Pretty much.
What's interesting about, I guess I'll say a couple things here. I'm mostly playing devil's advocate because I think we're all going to otherwise just sort of like circle jerk around this episode. I think it's undeniably like a great Star Trek episode.
Yeah.
So I'm really just, any sort of negativity that I seem to be leading towards is really just to sort of stir discussion. But I do think that this episode features the finest Worf and Picard interaction we've ever had.
Yeah,
I love the. That scene.
I actually was thinking. I mean, if I were to make a change and do something differently, I think because the last scene ends up being so black and white and there is not much room for gray, I would have put more emphasis on the Picard and Worf thing and then had that scene, that final scene be more of like a devil and angel scene for Worf and realizing that he's going too far. And you know what I mean? Like so have right. it, yeah. have Worf be the gray zone that has to kind of come back down to earth.
Like one of those, you'd start the conversation with permission to speak freely, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So Sean, you've been remarkably quiet. Would anything we've said here strike you as wrong?
And I agree. I don't know if I like this episode a lot. I don't know if I have other episodes this season that I like a lot more.
Interesting.
One question I had was when the evidence came to light that the explosion was some kind of an accident, what motivated her to keep going on her witch hunt?
Nothing besides the narrative needed it to continue. What had she done before that? Had she started accusing the medical person?
The fact still remains that he did give plans to the Romulans.
Yes, so the Klingon
even though something,
did,
the Klingon did give plans to the Romulans. So
the
even
Klingon,
though
not the medical officer who's half Romulan, just the Klingon.
So even
the only traitor in the episode is the Klingon.
Right, but so even though it wasn't a sabotage situation, I think she was still probably maybe this guy. I mean, because he still had to give them to someone who gave them to the Romulans.
Yes.
So why not keep pushing to see if we can get something?
But she was convinced that there was a lot more going on, and she wanted to make it a bigger deal than it actually was. But the Klingon thing was dismissed rather early on, so we're left with this guy who lied on his application.
Yeah,
feel satisfying for her.
Yeah, I think it was her willingness. She wanted to connect this guy, the Klingon, transmitting information and plans to the Romulans to this accident that happened, this accidental explosion, which Data and Geordi explained was just an accident. And so, Sean, you're saying from that moment, it doesn't make sense that this witch hunt proceeded.
Right. Like, let's say if she had some kind of interest in connecting the dots so that they could, the Starfleet could take action. If she has some kind of vested interest in that outcome, I could see why she would be trying. It's like, you know, the George W. Bush trying to tell us that there were WMDs and you know, all the money that was made off of that war. I mean, I could see if she was sort of like that, that's why she would keep going. But I don't see why she kept pushing it, except for no one believed her, and she just got more and more stubborn and just kept fighting and lashing out more and more and calling them out.
Well, I think part of it is, I think, you know, even though she knows that there was no sabotage, the guy doesn't know that. I mean, the kid, Brendan Dassey, there doesn't know it.
Yeah.
And if they say, oh, well, there's whatever that corrosive thing is was found on the thing, and the chance that he goes, no, I have no idea what that was. I had no intention of those plans being used for that way, you know, to catch him in that sort of a lie.
They say at one point, Clay, that he has access to corrosive chemicals because of his...
Oh, no, I understand. Access. I just think she's pushing that.
Yeah, she's trying to walk him into a trap.
You know, work something out, like the end of a Law and Order episode.
Why... Exactly. Right. So I think Sean's question is, why does she do this? What's in it for her? And I think it's at that moment that this character goes from being a very interesting admiral in the world of Star Trek to being a two-dimensional shrill harpy with daddy issues that ends up that like resolves a really excellent Star Trek The Next Generation episode with like really problematic commentary on women or something. Like, this is a really messed up thing. The scene where everybody is walking out, so she gets really shrill and screams at Picard, how dare you use my father's words, you're a traitor. Like, she goes off the deep end, and from that moment of passion and craziness, she just sits quietly in her seat while everyone slowly files out of the room, starting with whatever the Federation admiral officer, you know, big guy, the big wig gets up and walks out.
Tom Henry.
Anybody else? Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's it's a really disjointed and kind of fucked up scene. Why would they do it like this?
Well,
she's disgraced. She's absolutely disgraced. And they built her up as this in the beginning, she was a really great idea for her character. Well, I think the actress did the best she could, but in the end, I mean, she doesn't actually have a moment of realization. Sorry.
No, that's fine. I think the ending's clever in that Picard and Worf agree that they don't know if her career is over. They imply that she's going to continue on, which I think is a much more realistic take on it.
Well, didn't they drag her out of retirement to do this in the first place? Like, she was already retired. So I guess I don't understand why they would use this character in this way. I mean, it's such a two-dimensional device. Right. Like, this shill, this straw woman, this harpy is unnecessary, and it, like, cheapens the what would otherwise be an excellent episode, I think. What did you guys think?
I think what would work for me, and maybe this might work for Tana too, is if she came out of retirement because she never felt like she had a great victory, and this might be her chance to really make a mark. So she really wanted to have like a good epitaph, and she just couldn't stick the landing. And there was no case beyond, you know, the symbol.
Well, I mean, they could've... or something in this direction, but it seems like she had. There's a pausing point in the episode where if you watch the first half or however long, she is awesome. And there's no indication that she has an axe to grind or that there's some unresolved issue or that she has a history of witch hunting. None of that is presented in the first half. And then there's this sharp about face in the second half where it becomes a witch hunt that culminates with her losing control of herself and screaming at Picard, "How dare you use my father's words? You're a disgrace to the Federation," like, goes insane and then quietly sits down, humble or disgraced. Like, there's no continuity. A woman that's going to lose her mind screaming at Picard might also scream at the audience. You know, like, there's just no character continuity there for me. And it's stuck up glaringly.
While I think you're right, I think that it is a unprecedented turn given what you learn about her in the episode.
Yeah.
I think that character could have been anybody. It could have been a younger character who's trying to make their name. I mean, I don't necessarily think that I think maybe it comes off worse because it's a female character, but I mean, there's male characters do that stuff all the time and have the same kind of.
You know what it reminds me of? The guy that tries to disassemble Data. Do you guys remember that episode?
Right. Yeah. Right.
Like, it's the same sort of tone, but he doesn't get shrill and like start screaming, you know, about Data or something. Like, I don't know that there's. Do you guys who have seen this show up until this point, every episode, is there something analogous here? Like, is there a reason for them to do this to what would otherwise be an amazing character?
I don't. Well,
I think it's a matter of it being a dramatic way to end a courtroom scene, basically.
Yeah. I think anybody
on the prosecution in any Law and Order episode could have done the same thing, you know?
Yeah.
I think
it's tied to gender. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying it sticks out. It's glaringly.
No, definitely. Yeah. I mean, it is character wise, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. No.
Well, I think that, like, it comes down to the problem here, Shades of Grey, right? There's no, her reaction seems overblown because she eventually hits a point where she doesn't have any evidence to stand on.
Yep.
Which becomes the main problem here. If, like, I would buy her being really into it if it was ambiguous as to whether or not this Tarsus person was involved.
Right.
You know, and you'd be like, you can hit the same point where you'd be like, there's just no evidence. And, you know, she'd be like, but I know it's this guy. And the audience would maybe be like, ooh, there is a lot of evidence in his favor. But it doesn't hit that point. The show doesn't have enough time in an episode to layer stories that well. I think this episode is beautifully paced. And they really put as much information as they can into a 40-minute show.
Yep.
Any more information would eventually become distracting to you and sort of clutter up the narrative. So I think in context, it makes a lot of sense. She gets, I think she reacts appropriately for someone whose point is to show how far some people are willing to go. That would be my take on it.
Yeah.
If they just moved, they moved the effects, like when they find out that it was an accident, if they move that to the last 5 minutes, so you can let her go on. And as an audience, you don't know if she's right or if Picard's right.
Yeah. That would
and then when they figure it out, like the tests are done, they're like, sorry, lady, you're wrong. She can either go, well, I'm not going to stop investigating. She could storm out.
Right.
Or she could say, you guys are all being naive. I mean, there's a lot of different ways that she could have she could have not ended up in disgrace, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Right.
I just think
it just doesn't seem, there's something off there and I can't put my finger on it exactly, but it sticks out a lot.
It's also, I think, a little bit problematic that there's no, because this is so unserialized, there's no greater conflict that we can really draw on.
Yeah.
You know, we're kind of aware that the Romulans and Klingons sometimes seem to work together. But there's no, it's not like this is DS9 and the Dominion War is happening.
Right.
And you can sort of build off of that. So there's nothing really in the background to make it seem like this is a likely thing.
But she comes across as the villain more than anyone else. Even more than the Klingon. I mean, she's got more heat, more passion, more dialogue. Like she's the bad guy in this episode, in a way.
The Klingon was a pretty honorable spy. He's like, you're goddamn right I spied, but I didn't blow up the fucking thing. It's like, oh, what a nice spy.
She's the bad guy, but again, she's not the bad guy until like the last few minutes of the episode. And I think you're right. I think knowing that she's wrong does hurt things, because if we don't know that she's wrong, then it looks like Picard and she are just two different sides of a coin.
Yeah.
Right.
It's sort of, did you guys get the notes of like McCarthy era?
She's a clear
That's
McCarthy.
That's what this is, right? But unlike McCarthyism and rooting out who's a communist, she, instead of like having, we do it for a country, we do it, you know, for whatever, she gets really shrill, and it boils down into this like daddy issue thing. Like she starts screaming at Picard about, don't you dare invoke my father's words.
I do get a little uncomfortable when people call their parents great people. It generally never seems to end well.
And the whole background was that they would sit around the dinner table, her and her siblings, and they would discuss every angle of a nuanced and complicated situation until they had seen it from all sides.
Yeah.
And then they could like leave the dinner table, and that was a fond memory she had of her dad, except this is exactly the opposite of that. This is her clinging onto something with no proof and then beating everybody over the head about it, which is a violation of everything her dad taught her. She's screaming about, don't you dare invoke my dad. Like, none of it makes sense, you guys.
Well, I don't, I think a weakness in fiction all the time, although there are shows that have sort of built themselves around this. I know Andromeda, the show that was based off of like a concept that Roddenberry had, it would start each episode with a fictional quote. And I think you lose a lot of impact when you make up a quote for someone who didn't exist.
You know, I had the same problem when I started watching The Wire, because every episode of The Wire starts with a quote from a character from The Wire.
Yeah.
And the very first episode of The Wire has a quote from a character from The Wire. And I was like, who the fuck is this guy? I don't give a shit about this.
Yeah.
Like, why are you giving me a quote of a character I haven't met yet?
It's always. Although I think it works.
It works eventually.
At least because the quote of the character in The Wire happens in that episode, you know, or something, or a previous episode, you've seen it. This one is just Judge Satie or whatever, and it's not even really that great of a quote. I'm going to try to look it up, but here it is. With the first link, the chain is forged. The first speech censored. The first thought forbidden. The first freedom denied. Chains us all irrevocably.
That's a Toto song, I think.
It's not a great, memorable quote. It's too long. It's not curt enough to be a great quote. But that would be my major thing. I do want to – I think we've talked that angle to death. I wanted to talk about one thing that I was thinking. This is the episode that I think has been so interesting to me as the dark side of Beta Zeds.
Why?
Because of their pure ability to have far too much power in a sort of conversation between people.
This episode is another episode where I understand it given the way the plot turns out and the way the plot goes, but they're bringing another Betazoid in to do Troy's job. Like Troy's in the first time they interview that Klingon, Troy is in the room.
Yep.
And she at no point afterwards is like, you know what? I don't think he's telling the truth. Like this guy they bring in does exactly the thing that she's there for.
Except,
and I understand.
He's
I understand.
Wrong.
Right.
Right. And I understand that they have that conversation, the Admiral and Picard, about whether or not to use a Betazoid, which is totally fine. I just think in this instance, I think Troy probably should have been in more than one scene. If that's going to be a turning, like a, something you pivot on for the story, I feel like she should, I don't know. I feel like she should have been there more.
I might agree, but what I thought is fascinating is that I think a lot of criticism that I've had of the Troy character is, you know, it's like, why can't you sense this? Like the plot always has to excuse her not being able to sense it.
Right.
What this other Betazoid does, which is interesting, is that he senses duplicity, right? But he assumes it's duplicity about the wrong thing.
Right.
Which is fascinating. It's like it makes a lot more sense. You think they'd explore that more. It's like people have a variety of emotions about a variety of circumstances. And if you don't know what they're feeling about, I'm sure it can be confusing to Betazoids because they would draw conclusions that weren't necessarily true.
Yeah, no, it is a really interesting thing to do, and I wish they had explored it a little bit more. And it kind of reminded me almost of having just watched Making a Murderer and having seen the countrywide fallout because of it in either direction, it actually did make me feel like this character was almost an audience stand-in because this guy is seeing this person's answers or whatever, and then immediately he's like, oh, that guy's lying.
Yeah.
Like, well, you don't know that. He's just afraid. No, he is full of shit. He is so guilty.
Yeah.
What do you what do you have no proof of that? I just know.
Yeah. That's absolutely true. I have a gut feeling I'm going to work the evidence to get this guy because he is he's the one.
I
would love to see this episode when there was the explosion, what if a friend of Troy's did die? And she was the only Betazoid, and she was convinced that he knew more than he was telling. So she was sort of driving this. And then in the end, she had to realize that the evidence was not there. She was misreading everything because she was biased. And she had to accept that even as an empath, she could fool herself even. That would be interesting.
That would have been fantastic, but in order for that to have happened, the writers would have had to have any sort of grasp on Troy as a character, which they don't.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I just noticed the scene. I wrote this down in my little notes. They're talking about, it's the Admiral and Picard talking in his ready room, and the Admiral says something like, are you saying you never used your Betazoid in an interrogation?
Yeah.
And Picard's response is like, actually, no. Like, we don't really...
Oh, I disagree. He says he'll have to reconsider his use of her in the future.
And their response is, let's use Troy less. That made me die.
my favorite Troy moment from this episode, actually, was in the very first interrogation scene where the Klingon plays the race card by saying, oh, you guys are just doing this because I'm a Klingon. And then Troy pulls the, no, some of my best friends are Klingons line.
She did. I was intrigued. I didn't think the Klingons would have exobiologists. That seems like out of the blue that they would have random scientists who do these things. I would trust any Klingon scientist to immediately be a spy. I don't get it.
Yes.
I think we've talked a lot about this. And do I have any other points that I wanted to make up? No, I don't. Or make up or talk. I just I did love the continuity here. I think it was genius to use Worf's father's story as motivation for him to be care about what the Romulans are up to. That was good. I love Satie apparently this was a complete retcon, but she discovered the conspiracy aliens from the first season, which is not true, but we'll let her say that. The Prime Directive, I don't know if 9 is the actual amount of times in the episodes that we've seen where Picard has violated the Prime Directive. And she goes cold as ice when she brings up the Borg and the 11,000 people that Picard killed.
Yeah, well, how do you sleep at night? Like, that was cold.
That was my favorite thing that she did in that scene, because it was like, again, that character was almost like a stand-in for anybody who watched the show who had the same questions.
Right.
You know, at the time, you know?
Yep. And it was, they didn't do it, but it would be a good, it would have been a good chance to show Picard still conflicted. He says he's okay, and he seems to be perfectly okay at this point, but
he should have said, we are fine.
He should have said, pain is irrelevant. This trial is irrelevant. All right. Well, I'm going to play an audio clip, and we're going to come back, and we're going to give our final ratings, final thoughts for the Drumhead.
It is over. Admiral Henry has called an end to any more hearings on this matter.
That's good.
Admiral Sati has left the Enterprise.
You think we've come so far? Torture of heretics, burning of witches, all ancient history. Then, before you can blink an eye, suddenly it threatens to start all over again.
I believed her. I helped her. I did not see what she was.
Mr. Worf, villains who twirl their mustaches are easy to spot. Those who clothe themselves in good deeds are well camouflaged.
I think, after yesterday, people will not be so ready to trust her.
Maybe. But she or someone like her will always be with us, waiting for the right climate in which to flourish, spreading fear in the name of righteousness. Vigilance, Mr. Worf. That is the price we have to continually pay.
All right, guys. So I was playing devil's advocate a lot for this one. I can only criticize this episode, I think, if I'm somewhat comparing it to modern television. I'm going to start this off. I'm going to give this one a 5 out of 5. I think it's the best episode from the fourth season so far. I think this is as focused and tight a story that the Next Generation is capable of really telling. It's a little bit one-sided. It's a little bit black and white. You could easily break down what they're talking about into a multi-episode arc, but they do a pretty good job of handling a pretty complicated situation. Make you think, you get good performances and all that jazz. So what do you guys think? We'll start with Tana.
I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. I think that it is an excellent episode. The only problem and the thing that keeps it from being a 5 is that they reduce this Admiral character to kind of a straw woman. And I understand where it is in time, you know, in the 90s or late 80s. When was this made, Wes?
91.
Yeah. So, like, I get the time for it, but I have high hopes for the series. So, 4 out of 5. Loved it. Yeah.
Sean?
I go 4, but I'm at a low 4. I love the thing that really moves me about this episode is the amazing acting, the amazing moments. Like when she accuses Picard, his reaction, like all that stuff goes a long way with me. I think it's well written, but I think I was so excited all the way through. But that when she is left in disgrace, I don't feel for a very good reason. That kind of bugs me.
Sure.
But because there's so many things going well in this episode, I'm going to stick to a 4.
Clay.
I'm going to go with a 5. Especially coming off of the last two that I watched, honestly, the last three. Yeah. I think this one really caught me off guard at how much of a step up it was from, you know, Geordi yelling about not being respected by his holodeck crush.
Oh, yep.
And, you know, I think it's one of those things where it works better on... I don't think I've ever watched this episode before. And I think this episode works better on first watch than it does on rewatch.
Sure.
Because then a lot of those, you know, all the
minutia, you can,
yeah, all that stuff kind of comes up, and yeah, it is a character turn for the Admiral. It doesn't, you know, doesn't, it kind of comes out of nowhere, but I think it, like you said, Wes, I think it's paced so well that, and it's really interesting, and the acting is so good that when you're in it for the first time, you're just sort of along for the ride of watching, you know, these people, you know, kill it basically.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and it's definitely the best one I've seen in the season so far, so I got to give it a 5.
Interesting, nice. Interesting. Well, yeah, I think we all agree. We all think it's certainly a stronger episode.
And also for the questions it brings up terms of, like, relations and you know, species – well, in this case, species relations, but, you know, applicable to
– modern day, yeah.
Yeah, or any time, really, and how you interact with people. I think it's a really – good question to bring up.
I think it's like Tana said, it's sort of a timeless story because you're always, you know, we had the communists, which this was obviously after. You have Islamic terror, current day is like the issue that this is most applicable to. And I think it's always just going to be, I think they even say it in the episode. It's like once you just start to slip, people are going to rush to fill the void of what this episode is talking about.
Right.
And I think it's just, I think the Picard's line at the end is vigilance is the price you pay for freedom is a better quote than Admiral Sarti's quote. I think it's just more applicable.
I really hope someone uses that in like a public forum someday.
It'll be Ted Cruz, right? Because he fucking loves Star Wars or Star Trek, apparently. So God. President Cruz, 2016, we'll get to hear vigilance is the price you pay for freedom. Hey, keep your fucking politics out. All right, guys, thank you very much for coming. If you enjoyed the content, you're on YouTube, like in the comments. Appreciate it. If you're on iTunes, a rating or review helps get the show out there. We're going to be back with Half a Life in a couple days. Guys, thanks very much for coming on to talk about this. I had fun.
Yeah.
Me too.
It was a good discussion. Anyway, see you guys in a couple days.